The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, also known as Some Gadget Guy, which is the SGG of this horribly named podcast series, but the QA is the important part because that obviously stands for the questions and the answers, which we like to make this an interactive conversation on the top tech news stories that are hitting our interwebs these days, traveling down the tubes of our internet so that we can sort out our feels and also follow up on stories as they evolve. Especially if you're like me and you're kind of a news junkie and you're not so keen on just sort of outrage on a headline and then forgetting that that news story ever took place. Already seeing some great chatter in this week's live chat. Awesome Possum, Nail Bender, Al Spockley, Lanny Vazikos, Dave Burns, Raymondit, Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt. I think I missed someone. Simon Says Hypno. There we go. We got a good collection already kicking off this live stream. Ozzy Beachbum. Hey, what's up, Ozzy? So, first of all, happy Monday. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I spent a lot more time working this weekend than I'd really intended on just trying to wrap up some videos, trying to put together sort of longer-term coverage on a couple of gadgets. I got a surprise, Android 11 update on the V60, which was just kind of refreshing given how quiet LG's been of late, and I'm still grappling with how I want to finish up Galaxy S21 coverage when I'm really not feeling that phone. So it's definitely been busy. On top of that, just the sort of lifestyle issues of producing content. Like Friday I started shooting just some footage of the V60, the Android 11 update, and out of nowhere, one of the case fans in my big old workstation just started grinding. I was really freaking out because I thought it was my radiator because I use a closed loop, a liquid cooling on my PC. And just meh, which is a terrible sound to hear coming from a PC. Like, that's really bad. So I go through the process of really trying to like figure out, is it this one? Is it this one? Is it this one? I'm doing that terrible thing you should never do. When the PC is running, I've taken the glass door off of the side and I'm lightly tapping each of the fans to stop it to see if I can figure out which fan is the one that's making the horrible angry hornet noise. Don't do that. That is a really good way to mess up your PC. But I determined that it's one of the case fans that came with my Thermaltake, with my Thermaltake PC case. And they're not good fans. So this is the second one I've had burn out. The case came with four fans pre-installed, and I'm down to two. And this morning I put in an order just to replace the other two. Like, I'm not gonna wait for them to fail also. So now I've got one just stopped. It just stopped working. And I almost kind of preferred no noise over grindy buzzy noise. But I got another case fan in there yesterday, and it was right before TK's stream. TK was hosting that Sony B Alpha event. He did a great workshop and question and answer on the Xperia Pro. I'm really proud of my boy TK, because if you've ever been in a position where you've got to do a live news or a live broadcast or a live stream like that, and especially on someone else's channel, it's pretty heavy. But yeah, I gutted the PC case. And another, hey, don't do as I say, but not as I do kind of situation is maybe get in and clean out your PC more often than I do. There was a fog of dust in the office as I was using like little air rockets. I try not to use compressed air, just because I feel like that's probably worse on computer components. But like, I was really getting my grip workout with my little blower, rocket squeezy, little ASMR action for rocket squeezy air. I was dislodging concerningly large-sized dust bunnies from the radiator and from some of my other case fans. So it was pretty gross. It was super gross. So yeah, I hope your weekend was less tech maintenance-y than mine was, and that you got some good downtime. You got some time to unplug, unwind, and spend some time with family. And excuse me. That you are in good spirits to get your week started off right with some good tech news, and then hopefully just some cool casual chat. If we want to follow up on anything, definitely keep the questions hopping here in the comments, and we'll get into some nitty gritty and some specifics if you want to deep dive on stuff. Simon says Hypno highlighting a comment. Oh, I thought for a second you were just using lung power and would faint. Yeah, I don't know that I would have sustained, because I was blowing out like some really gross stuff out of my PC case. And I think if I were just blowing like with my face, I would blow, and then I'd have to inhale again, and I'd just, get all of that air, all of that dust just directly into my lungs. As it is now, I'm feeling a little itchy just from how much. I shared a photo on the Discord of just like how caked with dust the surrounding tabletop, because I use my work table, the same one that I shoot all of my content on. I use that as like a sort of my PC building station. It was proper gross. It's like the most I've ever had to vacuum after fixing anything on a PC. Ooh, Vazico say, that's a good point. I have put engine oil in the back of a Thermaltake fan that had stuck from dust from an old PC, and it worked fine afterwards. Interesting. The first fan that I had failed, that might have worked. The second one, there was something else happening where the motor was grinding. And also, because of the way that Thermaltake kind of routed the cables, I had had that cable, the fan cable, under my motherboard. So I couldn't even get it out properly. So I ended up just taking some tin clips and snips, excuse me, and just snipped the cable out of the case completely. I was like, I'm not going to try and save this fan. It's kind of a garbage fan. But now I've got a nice little RGB external blower fan just to help. And it's my PC's running much quieter now. I'm very happy with that. Yarn 1980. My 5-year-old daughter told me to stop making that noise, not realizing it was you. I'm sorry to bring malcontent to your household and to your family. Oh man. Dave Burns, I bought PC Cooler Moonlight fans, and I'm quite pleased with the performance to noise ratio. I did not go fancy with the replacement fan, but I really want to maybe gut the RGBs on my next build and go all like blackout, just super dark. And then I'm wondering about what fans I should put in there, because it's actually getting a little tricky to find non-lit up fans easily and quickly accessible, and not paying a lot for really good blower kit just to kind of keep your PC running smooth. I think my next build, I'm just gonna rip off everything and go. How do you pronounce that? Is it Noctua? Noctua? I'm not exactly sure what syllable to emphasize. But I, on around my, I've got a quartet of intake fans around my power supply that are Noctuas that are just crazy silent. And I think I might want to build the entire case around those fans. All right. Let's knock out some housekeeping, because it always takes me a disturbingly long time to talk about all the things I've made. And this was another pretty busy week coming off of some high drama last week. I'm going to try not to get so maudlin. Like, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm only on like 5 hours sleep. And my daughter and I had a crazy morning routine of trying to get her set up for Zoom school. So I'm like lit. I'm on more coffee than I should be. Boeing by Brown and Beige and Proud. Noctua fans are known for being sort of brown and beige, which never looks right in any other kind of case build, especially on lots of dark cases with RGBs, but the fans are so good and they're so quiet. Awesome possum. Housekeeping is fire. Don't trip. All right. So I'm going to try and stay in lighter spirits, and I'm really stoked to be playing with the cheap phone that has 5G on it. And there was a lot of drama last week. I really don't like the sick thrill feeling of trying to directly engage in conflict on the internet. And this week, lots of folks cranky with some of the videos I put out. So just kicking over into screen share right quick. Oh, I did not format my screen well for this. Hold on one second. Do, 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 do. Doing it live. Okay. So starting off last week, we've been hearing rumors on what, like, say, the next Asus ROG phone might have. Ricky, the YouTube tech guy, let me borrow his Red Magic 5S. And, I've gotten to play with some Black Sharks. I even was feeling nostalgic and pulled out a Razer Phone 2. Just to kind of compare against where we are currently with modern day phones and just what a gaming phone might still be able to do long term. And it just kind of got me thinking, like, what should we be hoping to see on a gaming phone this year? I'm a little concerned about the current chipsets that are out there. They run really hot. And it might be a gaming phone that can really extract all the performance that we might want to see. So I put a video together just on the things that I'd hope I'd see. What's next for gaming phones in 2021? Then I started off my Galaxy S21 commentary with an incendiary headline, Samsung Galaxy S21, a poor value. So probably tomorrow I'm going to have my buy the benchmarks written up for the Galaxy S21. And so far there is only one test I can perform where I can consistently point to an advantage on the Galaxy S21 over Galaxy Note 20s, over Galaxy S20s. And I know, I mean, like, the big marketing feel-good headline for the S21 is, we're selling the S21 for $200 cheaper, full MSRP, than we sold the S20 for. What a great deal. I don't know that it's really that great of a deal. And especially considering how Galaxy FE prices are going, and if you can, because Samsung discontinued the S20 pretty aggressively after it launched. If you can still dig up an S20 and you do a little savvy shopping, you'd end up with comparable performance, a more premium build quality. It does cost more to make the S20 than it does to make the S21 in terms of frame and build materials. You'd get MagStripe payments in Samsung Pay. You'd get SD card support, similar camera performance just for having the exact same camera hardware, just an older SoC for the image processing. And as I go through real-world tests, there isn't much that the S21 can significantly outperform last year's phones. And so again, it's interesting watching the reaction to videos like this, because I didn't even really do heavy comparisons. This is mostly a Samsung versus Samsung video. And depending on how you want to spend your cash, I think you get more phone on an S20 and at similar prices. If you're looking at the used and refurbished market, especially against a used S21, where prices have already dropped on their, the value. These phones don't hold any value very well. So I put that video out there. Obviously, this was like savaged on our Android over on Reddit.
Oh, all Juan does is talk about video rendering, like anyone does that.
And then, I'm a little concerned. So now the follow-up needs to be, how do we see performance managed and mitigated on other devices? This is making me really excited and anxious to see what Oppo and Sony do, because if they're using the same processor, are they going to do a better job of extracting performance out of them? And also, will we see those brands throttle the performance out of the box? Because Samsung throttles the performance. Actually, one of the best series of comments, I had several Galaxy S21 owners come to this video and kind of ready to fight me, but then also say, hey, like, I had no idea Samsung was throttling my phone. Thank you for telling me about the enhanced performance mode, because it's buried in your battery settings. That kind of stuff is frustrating. It was frustrating when Samsung started out of the box lowering the resolution on higher resolution screens. You had this quad HD display, but out of the box, it was 1080p. And now you've got this amazing, the most powerful processor that Samsung has ever put into a phone, and they are throttling it. They are detuning the performance right out of the box, which to me is sort of disingenuous. Like, it's not a lie, but their marketing is specious. And if you run without enhanced performance on, if you let the phone stay throttled, you're kind of performing in Snapdragon 855 territory for a lot of your CPU-bound benchmarks. Which again, last year, if you had a phone with an 855, it was garbage. But this phone runs hotter than an 855 and performs about the same. So it's not a great look. Oh no, Simon says Hypno. The S20 was Scooby-Doo to S21's Scrappy-Doo. That's dirty. Dave Burns too. This pisses me off so much. Video render tests are the bread and butter of PC component testing. Why the hell should we test mobile SoC to the same standard? I think you mean why shouldn't we, or why should we? Why should we test a mobile SoC to the same standard? Because that's also not the only test I run. I feel like if you're on the go and you want to deal with documents and file support, I also run a compression test. If you're a photographer and you don't want to have to break out a laptop, I also run batch photo processing tests. I run a video stabilization test out of Google Photos. I'm trying to find other real world applications that we can really compare performance on. And then also in a way where you can say, like, hey, if you use this app, this phone performs better on this app. And that's why I also still test on premium phones the difference between PowerDirector and KineMaster. They're two video rendering applications, but just like Adobe Premiere and DaVinci Resolve, your performance is very different on different hardware configurations. And I don't know what kind of secret sauce LG is putting into their image processing chain, but LGs perform better on PowerDirector. OnePluses rock my socks on KineMaster. Well, actually, OnePluses and iPhones. Of the two breeds of phone that you wouldn't think on different platforms, different app delivery packages, iPhones on KineMaster, if you want the absolute fastest rendering, LumaFusion is probably a better video editing platform, but KineMaster's render is just insanely fast. And same thing, OnePlus is leveraging KineMaster in a very aggressive way. But again, if you don't test for those kinds of differences, then no one's going to know. And so I just bristle a little bit because I just don't feel like what's the point of a conversation about an S21, a premium tier? This isn't Galaxy A. I'm not trying to slam an A71 here. Galaxy S should represent crown jewel, top tier, premium performance. And I really don't agree with this sort of techie assessment that because average consumers only use their phones for the bare minimum, that that's how we should reflect a review of a device that makes extremely bold claims. Samsung is talking about battery life epic for days, talking about the highest tier of performance that Samsung has ever delivered in a product. And when you really put it down to brass tacks, I'm not seeing that that's accurate. And then at the same time, like gaming, I know for whatever reason, Genshin Impact has become, is it Genshin Impact? Because I was testing for a while on Honkai Third, Impact Third. I don't know. I can't remember these games' names. I know for whatever reason, 60 frames per second on that game has become like the gold standard. I like testing on things like Switch and PC ports. I love, you know, like testing games that I can play on a computer and then also move that gameplay to a mobile device. Like, I'm sorry, Dead Cells is one of the best games you can play on Android. It's great. I freaking love it. But I really like torture testing on a little on a game called Undead Horde. It's this little unit management game. S21 does not perform well on that Switch port, where again, Notes performed better, S20s performed better. The OnePlus 8T kept almost a 10 frame per second advantage after about 20 minutes of gameplay and was much cooler to the touch than the Galaxy S21. So there's a lot that I still need to finish up. And what we need to see now, what we need to see now is how manufacturers that I think are a bit more focused on the perception of speed, like OnePlus, or on the advanced power management capabilities like Sony. We need to see how those companies are going to react. I'm always going to be stoked to see, like, is LG going to come out with a V70? But I feel like LG in their current state is probably going to be looking at what Samsung's doing and is likely going to be strategizing in a South Korean flavor. And I don't know that we'll see the grand differences. I mean, we look at how LG and Samsung sort of influence each other, mostly in one direction. That's why I feel like Oxygen OS and Sony's flavor are really going to be the telling assessments of, is this a Samsung problem or is this a Qualcomm problem? But it should be a little concerning to us techies out there. There's a reason why I think Qualcomm is pushing the Snapdragon 870 as a complementary chipset to the 888 this year, which we haven't really seen before in years past. Oh, Dave Burns is saying Genshin is really popular because it's like Breath of the Wild. I haven't played it yet, and Genshin is also available on PC, and that makes sense. But I don't really play games like that. Uh-oh, on the Twitch, I just saw Hype Train incoming. You have a limited time to earn exclusive emotes. What's up? All right, Hype Train level one, sub, gift, or use bits to get to the next level. I'm not going to play the Hype Train game the whole time, but if you do, thank you, and thank you for your support. Tech Potato. The point about variable rate shading is reducing the resolution in areas of the screen where lower resolution doesn't affect quality, up to 30% performance enhancement on x86 integrated graphics. That's really, really interesting. Because I just realized that we're... Whoa, Paul! Holy cow, buddy! Hype Train! Dank Pikmin God saying Snapdragon 808 and 810 flashbacks. I'm a little concerned that we might be in that zone. I don't think it's going to be as bad. Like, I don't think the Snapdragon 888 is going to be melting the solder off of logic board components, but it does run hot. So Paul gifted out a bunch of subs to Nimrod Zich. JL, Mr. Malignance, Nailbender, Brent Van Hulst, Jose Rolmer, Barakaroth, Markod, Mauricio, Trinagooner. Thank you so much, Paul. That is amazing, and I very much appreciate the support, keeping these Twitch streams rolling like that. So that's pretty rad of you. Dave Burns, I'm Paul, and I like to steal crowns. So here's the deal. I just saw Tech Potato drop a very insightful comment on variable rate shading. What was he talking about? Variable rate shading? I'm trying to go through the live chat, and Hype Train just kind of derailed me here. Tech Potato, Snapdragon 810 was hot because of a planar 20 nanometer. SD888 is hot because peak TDP is high. Underlying manufacturing is still decent, but just binned for bigger devices. Yes. Sorry, my brain just tried to accomplish four things all at the same time. Let me reply to Tech Potato's comment, and then I'll go back to housekeeping because it's about Tech Potato. I was shocked to see, confirmed by Anantech, and also sort of measured and played with on the Xiaomi Mi 11, not necessarily just the chipset, like just the 888, but the GPU performance on the this new SoC is surprisingly high. I've seen measurements as high as 8.7 watts, and in a phone, that's ginormous. That is a lot of juice. Again, it's not terribly surprising how hot this device can get and how performance can get very inconsistent. On that one game that I like to play, Undead Horde, you see these spikes. I mean, it can spike to a very high frame rate in like 60, 70 frames per second, but then it plummets with unit management down to like 30. Where last year on a Snapdragon 865, it would kind of just hover in the 40s and then maybe climb to the 50s, maybe drop to the low 40s, but it's a much narrower range of performance than what I can generate on this Galaxy. So it's concerning. We need more data. I need to test on more phones. And I think the real test is going to be seeing other manufacturers who have a different focus on performance and power, like Sony, get into the game too. And Gary the Fireman blowing this up also for Mango Bandito, J Million NYC, Gunner Bravo Sr., Sudi Does Gaming, and Dave09. Oh, man, you guys are rocking my socks right now. Thank you so much, man. Seriously, both of you guys, Paul, Gary, all of you using some, using all of your bits and stuff. I really appreciate the chatter and the support. We made it to level 5. What? Simon says, Hypno, at this rate, my next phone will have an 870, and that is ancient tech from a lost ancient civilization. I have been, it's been a fun trip down memory lane. Like I did the Canon 7D. I pulled out the Razer Phone 2. We were in the middle of the Discord conversation and someone was showing a video where another tech reviewer had to take a shot on a current video, making fun of like the LG air gestures on the G8. So I pulled out the G8 and just did them. And they're like, this is really easy. I love watching tech reviewers like, how do hands work? I'm doing infomercial hand acting because this is so hard. And like, it really wasn't. But all of these older devices, you're like, you know, the practical daily day-to-day experience is still well powered by 2 to 3 year old older devices. Like I think a lot of people would be hard pressed to find specific differences in just getting around their day and even doing some heavier lifting stuff or firing up a camera. We've had 4K video recording for a while. Anyway, sorry, I'm going off on my soapbox and we're 20 minutes into housekeeping and I'm not done yet. Tech Potato, It feels good in the hand. Oh, that kills me. Oh, it's my least favorite tech truism. All right. The reason why I'm so stoked to see Tech Tech Potato in my live chat is because Tech Tech Potato is the YouTube creation of one Dr. Ian Cutress from Enentech. And he was kind enough to join me on a creator chat where we talked out almost 2 hours, just talking about benchmarking and performance testing and some of the differences between a more consumer-oriented audience and a more corporate-focused audience. You will likely not find anyone more knowledgeable on chipsets, fabrications, SoCs, the performance metrics that we use to quantify manufacturers' claims between different devices. And I've got to throw a huge shout out. Obviously, if you're a fan of the actual science behind the technology that goes into our products, you should be following Enantech. I've really enjoyed Dr. Cutress's shift over on Tech Tech Potato, where it's a more casual kind of vloggy style conversation about the things that he's working on. You get kind of a feel of the behind the scenes. And then just it's a place for him to do some sillier things too. Like a recent video of his was just what is the absolute worst processor to try and install Windows on? Just again, from someone who really understands processor design and architecture, that's a really funny video to follow that kind of commentary. So I greatly appreciate not only him being in the comments right now, but also taking the time to sort of offer a little tech therapy for free. As I've been struggling. Like it's been an existential problem for me over the last couple of years trying to quantify things like battery performance. I really can't tell you if battery does good on mobile gadgets anymore. Like the more I try to simplify the description of battery performance, the less meaningful it is. The more I try and granularly test actual power draw and output, the less accessible that information is to people who want like a simple number score. I really don't know how to tell you what battery life is like. Because as soon as I try to describe it, I have to I have to qualify a whole bunch of testing, which probably won't relate at all to someone who just pulls a phone out of their pocket and wants to check their email. Like it hurts my brain trying to make that work. And it's just super gross. Boing bite. Just use SOT. Almost made it through level 5 hype train. We made it to a level 4. You guys are amazing. Choo choo for the Twitch hype train. I'm blown away. Thank you so much, everybody, that's participating. Mauricio Brown. Tech tubers who complain about the LG G8's gestures are the reason why Serial has instructions. No. I think it's totally fair to critique air gestures. We're just going to let this entire podcast be derailed by Juan's digressions here. This is going to be a real choppy week this week. It is totally fair to critique air gestures because if the air gesture is too easily accessible, it can activate when you don't want it. If you try to make it specific so that the gesture is primed in a way where the phone won't trigger accidentally, it does require that specificity of movement. That being said, after pulling my G8 off the shelf and not having used it in months, I mean, easily almost a year now, actually, since I think the last time I fired it up in earnest and really used it. The muscle memory of getting it to activate and doing all of the controls and it came right back. So really, it just means you had to take the minute and then also understand like this is a setup that most people aren't going to engage with. You have to have the phone propped up, right? For the most organic wrist movement, because you've got to activate, push, and then pull. And then once you do that, you've got those real quick toggles that you can just fly back and forth and you can control a bunch of stuff that way. But the actual trigger is a three-step process that's very specific. When I watch tech tubers go, that means they didn't take the minute to figure it out. I'm not expecting consumers to really engage with that very much. I didn't think it was a hugely beneficial feature, but it was kind of a cool process to show what like a very detailed time of flight Z camera can do on the front of your phone. But it still bugs me that everyone still goes her air gestures while we're over a year now in shelter in place, pandemic response, and the G8, I believe the G8 alongside one of the Huawei's. Someone please tell me what Huawei also did this. The G8 was one of the few that offered a more secure face unlock and a fingerprint sensor. And everyone wanted to make fun of air gestures while completely ignoring one of the most crucial benefits of having a more detailed Z camera on the front of that phone. And that drives me crazy. King Turtle 2004, some but I digress guy. That is absolutely my hashtag this week. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. McCorcoran 3, Juan has already announced he's formally moving over to shill for Sony now after Austin Evans broke his brain. From RJ King. Okay, so this is exactly the point. RJ King says, I tried to use Palm Unlock when I first got my G8, but it wasn't reliable enough. I keep my phone propped up all day at work. So here's what's annoying. I completely agree. Standing the phone up, Palm Unlock sort of bends my wrist at a funny angle. Palm Unlock was better when you'd keep the phone flat. So I would keep the phone in my kitchen and I'd be cooking. I'd have messy sort of like stuff on my hands and I'd want to see the recipe and the screen had timed out. And when you keep the phone flat and you throw your hand over, it's much easier to kind of judge the distance and how to unlock the phone. It is the worst position to do the pullback gesture to activate the air gestures. But when you prop the phone up, I think it's harder to get a bead on where Palm Unlock goes. So again, I feel like the LG air gestures were absolutely rife for criticism, but that was all the cotton candy. That was all the icing on top of the cake, which was a more secure face unlock than any other phone that had been released around it. So again, I think that kind of stuff is funny, but I also think it's a cheap shot, low-hanging fruit when someone's like, hey, remember air gestures? It's 2021, right? We're a full generation of phones removed from the G8, and those kinds of tech YouTubers still cannot, to this day, give LG the credit for at least giving us the choice of face unlock or a dedicated hardware fingerprint sensor, and that's lame. I think that's easy lame in this day and age. All right, let's finish up housekeeping. TK and I had another wonderful conversation, best of our week, episode 11. I was exhausted when we shot this. I honestly cannot remember much of what we talked about. I know I was super cranky about Samsung again. So depending on what you listen to me for, you'll either be well familiar with some of my criticisms by now, or maybe this will be a surprise to you. Anytime I get the chance to just sit down and chat with TK, it's real good times. And then lastly, I did finally get a video out on Android 11 on the LG V60. a fairly smooth update for LG. I'm a little concerned that Android 11 seems to be taxing the battery a bit harder than where we were on Android 10. And this is another update that I think kind of cements for me that when we get these major updates, it might not be a bad idea just to completely hard reset your phone. When I first installed it, I tried to leave all of my user data intact going from Android 10 to Android 11. Stability was poor. Dual display was proper broken. Multitasking was just was locking up the phone bad. And then battery life was just plummeting. Doing nothing, it dropped almost 20% overnight. Because I don't plug in my phone at night anymore. So I hard resetted the phone and almost everything got better. Performance got better. UI transitions got better. Animations got better. Battery life was substantially improved. The dual display worked like I thought it should again. So just a nice little hey, howdy from LG, because they've been a little quiet of late. And it's been concerning how quiet LG has been. So it's nice that we're getting something out of an LG these days. And Dave Burns, what is an SGGQA podcast without 45 minutes of housekeeping? Man. And then also, I do want to point it out. I think if you go, I don't remember what YouTube channel it's on. TK hosted that Sony presentation, and I was just so proud of him for jumping in and tackling that conversation. I've been to Sony events, and back when the Xperia 1 was new, not the Xperia 1 Mark II, but the Xperia 1 Mark I, and they had an event at Sammy's Cameras, and I took a bunch of photography workshops. They only had one that was, and it was a combo workshop where it was Xperia 1 Mark I and Sony Venice Cinema Cameras. You know, like, why not both? I really enjoyed taking that workshop. So again, just one of our own, someone who does shoot Sony. I mean, he's been an advocate and a proponent of the Sony A7S III. And we tag teamed some of our coverage on the Xperia Pro just so we could kind of cover a bit more ground and get like speed tests and stuff done while not trying to like go hike out in public places too much. And seeing him kind of take that and host a Q&A workshop was great. TK is such a good dude. So hopefully, I believe that should be on one of the Sony YouTube channels. And if I can find the link for it, I'll include it in the show notes. And that takes us to our first news block. Of course, all of the stories, all of the housekeeping, everything we're going to be talking about today is going to be on the show notes for this week's episode on somegadgetguy.com. Aditya Anil is just making me crazy. Sony still makes cameras? let's get into some news here. Where are we? 9:40 in the a.m. Woo! This is going to be a long one today. I can feel it. You know what? We don't have to spend a lot of time on news because the first three news block stories are just subtle, are just small follow-ups to where we were already talking about FCC news, broadband, and net neutrality. We're going to rapid fire these stories to continue keeping your eye on. It's kind of a big deal when we talk about broadband distribution, and we're a year into the internet being the backbone of work at home, homeschooling. And also, like, I haven't seen my doctors in over a year because I've been doing televisits. Not having access to broadband makes you invisible. It makes you functionally irrelevant in the 21st century economy. And we don't even know how many people have been left behind in the United States. Current acting chairwoman of the FCC, Jessica Rosenworcel, is exactly the kind of figurehead I want at the FCC. What is hilarious here is that CNET's most recent two stories on the FCC are exactly the two topics that I wanted to bring up. So I'm just going to back to back both of these from CNN, from CNET, excuse me. FCC approves a $50 a month emergency broadband subsidies. The agency has approved rules to get $3.2 billion of COVID relief, a COVID relief fund up and running for people hit by the pandemic. So, four-member commission unanimously voted to approve rules to the program that will offer up to $50 a month to low-income households and up to $75 a month to households on Native American lands for broadband service. Chances are probably pretty good that if you're watching or listening in the United States to my podcast, to this right now, you probably don't qualify. I'm just going to make a very broad and hack generalization there. This is one of those things, if you have family members, especially family members in more rural areas, it is kind of difficult to get this messaging out to the people most affected by it. So if you know anyone in your circles of family and friends, maybe they're struggling with bills, maybe they've got issues with their local regional distribution, these are the types of programs that can maybe help. $50 a month doesn't sound like a ton. That would mean the world to someone who's trying to keep their kids connected to school and not driving out to a fast food restaurant parking lot just so they can do their homework. And especially for some of my history, my family, knowing what it's like out in rural New Mexico, where it can still sometimes be a challenge just getting a phone line out to a residence in very rural conditions, and knowing that Native American households have been struggling with these programs. And some of these programs have been rife for abuse. It's actually one of the things that Ejipai very quickly attacked early on in his tenure at the FCC, was these low-cost programs, you know, these subsidies. Oh, people got to pick themselves up by their bootstraps. Well, some of the people most affected by that change in policy were the people that we have the hardest time getting to, we have the hardest time reaching, we have the hardest time hearing from. So again, this is where we, as the really cool techies in our circles of family and friends, we can be good messengers. And if you know anyone who might be having issues with this, this is a good one to pass the word on. You know, this could be a huge help to a family struggling right now. On top of that, we do need to clear up this digital divide. We need to fix these issues with broadband deployment. So the other piece of news that I was really excited to see, I got to scroll down, FCC Chair Rosenworcel launches Broadband Mapping Task Force. The head of the new task force warns it could take until next year to fix the FCC's flawed maps. Federal Communications Chairwoman, Commission Acting Chair Jessica Rosenworcel announced on Wednesday the formation of a new task force dedicated to implementing long overdue upgrades to improve the agency's flawed broadband maps. But the new data isn't likely to be available until next year, an official leading the effort said during this agency's monthly meeting. As I alluded to just a second ago, we don't know how many people are properly left out. Under Ejipai, the FCC would allow ISPs to self-report on their broadband distribution. On top of that, there was a policy that was sort of tacitly supported where as long as one home in a community had access to broadband, and this is the FCC definition of broadband, which is like 25 megabit downloads and, oh, I can't remember now, is it 5 megabit up? Yeah, very low level connection when we compare to other industrialized and more sort of first world countries out there. Not a super high standard to reach, a very basic standard. As long as one household in a community had access, wasn't even paying for it, but just literally there was a cable hookup that they could use, the ISP was allowed to rate the community as having available broadband, even if all of the other homes in that block could not access that cable internet or that broadband internet. So we don't know. We've been relying on these sort of coverage reports from companies that are sort of playing loose with a definition of broadband that's sort of inadequate, and they've been allowed to sort of cook their numbers to make it look like they've been rolling out more aggressively than they really have. So it would make perfect sense to me. I would be very surprised if we did have better data after a year. hundreds of millions of Americans in this country. And again, the people we're most worried about are the people who are hardest to reach, hardest to survey, most difficult to communicate with. Those are going to be the biggest challenges. I would be very surprised if we had granular, good, on-the-ground data in under 3 years. I mean, especially for as underfunded a commission as the FCC is, I think this is going to take more time. And I think a year is very optimistic to get a good census of what's going on with broadband. So at least we're starting. Dave Burns, and me too. Rosenworcel has been so aggressive in her messaging, and especially in her opposition to some of Agitpie's policies. Sorry, Dave Burns says, I'm glad the FCC is less cynical. I like Rosenworcel's take on some of these policies being a bit more proactive. Nothing about this is proactive in regulating, but it's still a reactive agency when it comes to regulating industry, but it's becoming more proactive in the actual consumer benefits side. And that's where we've been lacking since Tom Wheeler. Agitpie threw a huge bucket of cold water on a lot of initiatives that I think really could be helping people out on the ground. So next up, and again, just as a quick follow-up, we talked about this before, that the Justice Department was backing off their lawsuit against California. There was a lawsuit preventing California from implementing their net neutrality rules. Here in California, we voted for our own flavor of net neutrality. We immediately got sued by telecoms, and then we also got hit by the Trump administration's DOJ. Well, under Biden, they've been looking at some of those Justice Department actions, and they decided to back off California. Another good bit of news here is that a court in California has denied an injunction from ISPs, which would have prevented us from implementing net neutrality while working through this lawsuit. So, effectively, in California, we can now start enforcing net neutrality policy based on our own local net neutrality laws while the ISPs are fighting their case in court. The main play was they were trying to stall that until they could finish this lawsuit. And if we know anything about net neutrality policy, we know that telecoms can drag out these fights for years. I mean, the original open internet order was a 10-year legal fight. I don't want to wait a decade to try and come to a conclusion on what net neutrality should look like. Once we implement this policy, we can get good data on whether California's version of this is effective or if it causes more problems or if it needs to be refined. And it's one of the strictest flavors of net neutrality that we've seen implemented yet. So we can start. I don't know exactly what that's going to mean. It's not like you just flip a light switch and all of a sudden these rules are implemented. There's still a lot that needs to happen on the ground, but it can start. Again, we can begin the process of getting back to where we were under Tom Wheeler's FCC. Paul's telling me to hydrate and Aditya is telling me to check my posture. I'm just going to kind of scooch. Get this out here. I did 20 hours of talking last week, so apologies for people listening, but you're going to be hearing me sip water and kind of clear my throat quite a bit. All right. Two other just funny, not funny. One's funny and the other is a little bit sad. Actually been working with Matt from Across the Podcast with Sam and Matt. Matt's got an Exynos S21 Ultra. And unfortunately, he seems to be having those issues where a couple of Samsung users have reported that on the February patch for their S21s, that battery draw has been pretty significant, especially for a phone with such a large battery. He's got the screen set to 60 hertz. I think he's even toggled off 5G. But again, it's just kind of interesting when we see Verizon kind of step back from their messaging. This was written up by Kim Lyons over on The Verge. Verizon support says you should turn off 5G to save your phone's battery. Verizon tweeted to a customer that was having issues, Are you noticing that your battery life is draining faster than normal? One way to help conserve battery life is to turn on LTE. Just go to Cellular, Cellular Data Options, Voice and Data, and tap LTE. So immediately the internet went, and started saying, hey, Verizon, with all of your 5G ads, are you saying that we shouldn't use 5G? And that tweet is now gone. So that never happened. Nothing to see here, folks. Waka waka. So here's what's kind of tricky. I'm sure Verizon has probably been getting tagged with some battery life complaints making this transition to 5G. It's kind of a little like when we went from sort of GSM 3G to 4G, GSM to LTE. Those first LTE phones just nuked battery when you would really fire up that faster data connection. We've got to work on SoC improvements. We've got to work on radio management. I'm hoping that the new Snapdragon this year, we can see some better radio management and wireless connectivity. But I also kind of wonder, is a part of this or is some of this, like if Samsung makes a mistake, the majority of Android customers on a network are going to complain. So if Samsung has an update out there that this month is just tanking battery life on the newest expensive phones that they sell, that adds to the support costs on Verizon's side, even though it might not necessarily be something that Verizon's doing. So it's just kind of interesting, like how interconnected all of these companies and parts and pieces. Qualcomm can make an adjustment to one tiny piece of a firmware that affects a part of a radio management, which then has to communicate to Android and then has to work through custom code that Samsung uses that then has to be verified by Verizon engineers to talk to their cell towers. And any one step in that chain can wreck a user's experience. It's so impossible. I'm not saying this to slam Verizon. I just think their PR, that was a regrettable tweet for their PR to put out. I'm not slamming Samsung. I'm not slamming Qualcomm. It is incredible to me that any product actually makes it to consumers anymore. When we think about how ridiculously complicated a little pocket computer is, how casually we kind of throw these things around and how we, you know, yeah, I live my life out of these things, but whatever, it's like a phone, you know, like that just describing the dozens of companies that actually do have to communicate and work together and all of the little institutions and all of the regulatory issues and all of the pieces and parts. And like, it's magic. It's 21st century magic that at any time, you could go to a store and buy a box and open the box and push a button and connect to the internet. Like, you make phone calls off of it. Like, it blows my mind that this process works at all. Just incredible. I mean, so again, even in one of the most frustrating ways, because I'm sure Verizon customers, Samsung customers, Qualcomm's probably getting reports on some of this stuff too. I'm sure everyone's mildly annoyed to majorly annoyed. And yet this to me just reinforces how unbelievably crazy this market is. I could not imagine trying to make something for consumers to use like this. Just nuts. DTNO, we live in a society. All right. Let's get this out of the way here. The sad bit of news, and I was going to maybe plan on spending more time and waxing philosophical, but it's just bumming me out. Fry's has closed their doors. So if you go to fries.com, all you get is this stark white page with some text on it. And like, okay, so they just put out some PR speak. After nearly 36 years in business as the one-stop shop and online resource for high-tech professionals across 9 states and 31 stores, Fry's Incorporated has made the difficult decision to shut down its operations and close its business permanently as a result of changes in the retail industry and the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's just sad. But I mean, again, you get to the very end and you're like, oh, and don't worry, for Fry's credit card holders with a balance due, you will continue to make your payments to the First Electronic Bank on a monthly basis as before. Follow this link to pay your bill. Like, it's just so sad. Fry's was one of those magical Willy Wonka lands where I would go and dig through computer components and look at cases and agonize over what CPU I might buy. And I mean, like, when I had that problem, when my first Western Digital NAS just tanked, I drove to Fry's. I knew they'd probably have a driveless replacement that I could just at least get all my data back. And, you know, I popped all of my drives into that replacement that came from a Fry's. I'm driving by and like, oh, yeah, I need some USB cables, or, you know, I could use a backup HDMI and I don't want to order it and wait a day. I could just go to Fry's. It's just really sad that because also we got a recent report, too, that Best Buy is looking at closing some stores or using some of their stores as like warehouse facilities for online shopping. And I do most of my shopping online. I'm trying to split out away from doing everything through Amazon. So B&H has become a regular. I love going to Monoprice. I'm trying to go directly to a manufacturer's site. So like Super Shields, they make screen protectors. I'm trying to buy directly through Super Shields instead of always buying through Amazon. Cases, components, where I can and where I don't need like the immediacy of like an Amazon drop. I'm trying to spread it out so that I'm not putting all of my eggs in one retail basket. It's been interesting seeing how like Best Buy has kind of shifted their market position a little bit, and I think for the better. Like, I think Best Buy service has improved. It's just a shame that Fry's kind of changed executive hands so frequently over the last couple years, and then landed in a very I don't know what word I want to use here. Just in a very vulnerable state. They were in a very vulnerable place right at the beginning of a global pandemic. So that definitely kind of burns just a bit. I liked having that retail option when it was a viable retail option. Like, Fry's has been kind of rough for the last couple of years. But yeah, it's you can't completely achieve the full retail experience just online. I need some place I can go and walk around and look at things. Like, shopping for a camera tripod. I was like, it was so handy being able to go to Sammy's and like balance out all these different options. Like, wow, I mean, carbon fiber really does save a bunch of weight. Flipping love like a dedicated retail space that has people there that actually know what they're talking about and kind of guide you through the process. It's so much fun. So yeah, it's just sad. I miss fun. From JJ, don't you work for Newegg too? Don't they have better deals on components? Well, Newegg, I believe we had to do a reorg. I'm pretty sure that we still do a package pickup. So the warehouses have one front office. I believe I might actually be wrong on this. There is one front office where if you're in City of Industry, you can order a part and then go and pick it up directly. But City of Industry is a pretty far drive from me. So I tend not to do the package pickup unless I know I'm going to be in the Newegg studios. Newegg has been a good gig. I feel like as an online retailer, they're one of my comparative shopping points, where I'll try and put them up against Amazon. And then because most of their warehousing is based in California, I can be pretty sure I'm going to get stuff super, super fast. So, I mean, they've definitely been a competitive leverage against my Amazon shopping too. It's just, you know, like a lot of people here are kind of going through, you know, nothing beats the Wiz. I miss Circuit City. It was nice. There was a golden age of consumer electronics in the heydays of like, home entertainment and the beginnings of the home PC craze. And I miss that. I miss that exciting, vibrant Wild West feel where you walk around and you could peruse, you can tap out on a couple keyboards. And now if you go to like a Circuit City, it's just, or not a Circuit City, I'm sorry. If you go to like an Office Max, you know, it's just kind of sad. You know, like you go there and there's like a 10-year-old keyboard covered in dust with like three keys missing. You don't want to touch it. I wouldn't touch it even before the pandemic because it just looked gross. I miss going to a Radio Shack and getting radio components and antennas and cabling. One year we did a terrible sweater contest for our family at Christmas, and my sister wired a red LED into her sweater because we ended up doing, each of us were different reindeer. And so we would all stand arm in arm, and it would be Santa's sleigh on my dad's sweater and all the reindeer on the kids' sweaters. And my sister wired and soldered a red LED into Rudolph's nose. She's the youngest, so she was at the very end. And she got all the parts at a Radio Shack. And you're like, that is so cool. Like, and it was like, oh, I need a different capacitor. And so she went to a Radio Shack and bought a capacitor. You know, like that kind of stuff is just, I want to be able to share those experiences with Lex, and I'm sad that it's going to be a little bit more difficult. So tech potato resistors are 3 cents each business. Resistor. I'm sorry. It wasn't a capacitor. It was a resistor that she needed for her LED. I am overly caffeinated and yet still not caffeinated enough. Thank you for subtly correcting me on that. I appreciate it, Ian. All right. So, that's the news block. I tried to get through that a little bit faster. Let's knock out the subreddit and then, kind of follow up on just a couple services news. And then I've got to share some of my, like, literally out of the box, first impressions on this Moto. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no exception. And I have been kicking butt on my own subreddit. If you go back to some of my podcasts, like middle end of last year, it was not common. It was not the regular for me to be at the top of reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We're calling it a three-peat, guys. Three-peat. 3 weeks in a row, number one. And this week, I didn't clean sweep like I did last week. Last week, I was the top three. This week, I'm only the top two. I'm still the top two. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to see a community of a much broader tech conversation. We properly broke. We had another surge of new members. So last week, I believe we were around 1580. And this week, we're at 1610. 1,600. We properly crested over. Number one with a bullet, Android 11 on the LG V60. Better late than never. Number two, what's next for gaming phones in 2021? Both of them, some doofy, punchable face guy in a flat cap just leading the way. Look at, I mean, it's just, Matt, are you in the live chat? It's just a beautiful thing. I mean, it's really pretty, right? Ah, just, you can smell it. You can just smell how good that is. All right, moving right along. Number three. Technically speaking, Peachy with a 6-month follow-up on the Google Pixel 5. He's been one of the hardest rock and Pixel advocates out there. He brings up some good points on things that he likes about his phone and why he would still recommend a Pixel 5 at the beginning of 2021. We've got John Darko looking at iPhone or Android for high-quality audio listening. A great video from TechAlter. 3 years later, did GDPR work? TechAlter is another one of those channels where if you like your tech commentary a bit more focused on the business and government side of how this affects consumers, you will find no better channel to follow than TechAlter. Rounding out our top five, we've got Lisa over at Mobile Tech Review checking out the Asus ROG Zephyrus G15. I flippin' love her reviews. Her channel does great. I mean, what is she at? 800,000? 840,000 subscribers. No one is saying Lisa doesn't do good traffic on YouTube. Her reviews are so consistent. Her analysis is so clean. It's so free of the most annoying YouTubery tropes and tech reviewer, tech influencer, wacky faces. Like, it's laptop reviews for grownups, but in a daily driver, practical kind of way. I really feel Mobile Tech Review deserves another zero at the end of their subscriber count. Like, this is a channel that easily deserves to be over 1 million subs, let alone 10 million subs. I flippin' love her style. It's so good. Rounding out some other videos that also did really well this week, Easy Computer Solutions looking at the difference between T-Mobile and Verizon LG Wings. We've got, also, he hit another one too. Use your phone, iPad, or tablet as a monitor for free. If you need extra screen real estate on your PC, how to use another device that you might already have. We've got Adam Reviews Tech with 2,000 subscribers checking out the Xbox Series S. We've got Tech PhD with 1,100 subscribers looking at the iPhone 12. We've got Chris Wilmhurst with just under 10,000 subscribers checking out a budget microphone. Xiaomi Mi 11, Nord N10. What to do about password managers from Shannon Morse. Shannon Morse snubs on Twitter. She is a security expert. So if you were kind of messed up by LastPass, she is one of the top opinions that I would follow if you would like to replace your LastPass. Excuse me. And of course, TK Bay, checking out some of the hidden features in Developer Preview 1 for Android 12. This was a real good week for the subreddit. I mean, first of all, because, you know, yours truly kicked butt. So it's always going to be good, you know, when I win, because I'm kind of the best, you know. You can ask Matt. Matt's always like, Juan, you're so great. And I'm like, yeah, Matt, I know. I know, man. It's good times. It's just what it is, you know? Reddit.com. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Share, subscribe, follow. Definitely don't be stingy with the upvotes. We're seeing more traffic. We're seeing more growth, especially over these last 2 months. We've seen a pretty decent climb. We're getting great submissions. And then also it's becoming that place where I'm finding a lot of new content creators. This is the kind of stuff that I won't find very easily on YouTube. So it makes me, again, I'm just like, I'm so proud of this little community. It started grassroots. It started legit. And now it's kind of building up and building up and building up. And we're starting to kind of broaden out of it. And it's really cool to watch. I'm really hoping that this can be that platform that helps promote content that we feel deserves more attention and can kind of help improve the SEO and the search for YouTubers that are trying to kick off, you know, they're trying to get their channel started, or maybe even some of those more popular presenters that have just been struggling with YouTube changes of recent. So one more time, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I mean, if you don't want to see me lead the way again next week, you got to start upvoting other videos. You got to be supporting those other content creators. And don't be shy in the comments. A few really great conversations have been born out of that subreddit. So, and TK Bay is in the live chat. Everyone say, hey, TK. Give him a wavy emoji. From Al Spockley, Glowing Rectangles is a great place to find new creators. I found a legit Sony shill guy yesterday with 260,000 or so subscribers, pitting the Xperia 1 Mark II against the S21 Ultra, and that was a fun watch. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I worked for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for TechAltar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
From Gary the Fireman. Fire, follow, like, and share, and don't forget to click that bell icon. Smash that bell. It's not on Twitch. We're on Twitch right now. Isn't that so refreshing? I have to do the smash the bell icon. All right, 10-10. And there were, let me get this out of the way here. I actually kind of saved this for the gadget block, even though it would be more of like a newsy piece. General lay of the land here. How many of you folks are looking at people who mostly focus their conversation on Twitter and would be supporting that individual by paying for some kind of Twitter Patreon style kind of communication? I'll be curious to see how or if this gains traction, but Twitter is looking at the next phase of what their service represents. We're going to be getting Twitter Spaces, which is kind of a clone of what we saw from Clubhouse, an audio town hall style platform for sharing communication and sort of having a public conversation that people can tune into, but with some moderation so that people aren't just yelling at each other all the time. The other major bit of news that we got was the super follow. So not only can you follow a Twitter person, you can follow me on Twitter and you can see all of my inane ramblings on Twitter. I share a lot of the links and videos that I produce for YouTube. I'm not sure this is it. So super follow, you set sort of a community access rate. It's basically a paywall for a specific user on Twitter, and it's with the promise of specific content that can only be reached if you subscribe with some kind of monthly fee. I run a Patreon and I like Patreon because it reminds me of like classic blogger, like blogger blogs, and I can kind of host different kinds of content on the Patreon, and it's an easy platform to manage and to fill with additional content. Like I do semi-regular production diaries. Like, hey man, I'm just having a trouble with this. When I had my first meltdown about battery testing, I went to the Patreon and just like, guys, problem, brain, hurt, ouch. And I kind of shared my behind the scenes there. The thing about Twitter though, is that I kind of count on Twitter for being in the moment disposable content. So this is where it's not to say I don't believe Twitter can't bring some tools and some cool access and like monetization. People should be paid if they're doing good work. I totally believe in that. But the philosophy of Twitter is what I have that little issue with, where Twitter is in the moment disposable content. I don't go back through people's Twitter feeds. I don't follow up on what have you been tweeting. I only really want to see what's current in that moment when I fire Twitter up. And that's why I'm kind of brain kinking. Like, this is, I'm not trying to slam the idea, but more, what are you trying to bring to the Twitter experience that's going to enrich my use if the main idea is I'm paying for access to see what people have already posted in the past? Not what they're currently doing in this moment right now. Or I guess, I mean, like the access would be, I get to see what they're doing in that moment right then. And that's what I'm paying for. But I just don't follow individuals like that. I mean, I'm a terrible person to ask about this kind of stuff because I don't really do Snapchatty or Instagrammy reels and stories. And it's just not my bag. I infrequently will post a lens on Patreon just to make fun of myself. Like, I posted a lens of me trying to blow all the dust out of my PC. You want to gross yourself out with how filthy my PC case was, you can get a quick snippet of video over on the Patreon right now. So, I'll be really curious to see. I do like that Twitter is trying to find ways to kind of evolve their platform and aren't just trying to immediately copy some kind of heavier or denser Facebook model. But the one thing I hope we never lose is the more immediately accessible and then immediately disposable aspect of Twitter, where I really feel like I need to make an archive of content for people to engage with. It's, I don't know, it's just a different philosophy. I have a hard time with that. Tech Potato. Twitter is set to launch another new service beyond super follows, only followers. You and Aditya Anil need to have a conversation about a certain fixation on a fanned site that begins with only. I think you two would do well. Oh, McCorkran 3, I should do a bobblehead. You know what? I need to look at how much a bobblehead would cost. I want one for myself. I want one with a TK crazy beard. I want one with me in a flat cap. I'm gonna have to check that out. That might be a thing I need to do. For Dave Burns, I just feel like I really only want to communicate with people on Discord and follow creators' distribution platforms, whether that be ad-supported or patronage-supported. And that's another thing, too. Okay, so you don't have Twitter Spaces yet. Maybe you haven't been invited to Clubhouse yet. So much of that is already replicated on other platforms and other services. There's a part of that, what we're doing right now on Twitch, where I'm following a live chat and you're able to send me comments and I can kind of get a feel for the flow, even though I'm not reading every single comment out loud. You go to a Discord and you go into voice chat. That is a Clubhouse. You have just created Clubhouse in a private community, people you know, and you can engage on the same kinds of topics and conversations as a Clubhouse. And if you want to, you can choose. If you want to make that a big open public invitation for other people to join, you can. Or you've got the moderation tools to lock it down. These businesses aren't unique. These models aren't groundbreakingly new. It's just a different place to host the same kinds of conversations we've been able to achieve on other platforms. And that's the thing, is like Discord kind of, if you belong to a Discord server, you kind of know who is a part of that Discord server and you can very carefully maintain the quality of conversation that you hope to have there. Aditya Anil, Juan doesn't even have a fake plant in his studio. Is he even a tech reviewer? I need a succulent. I killed my last one. I completely just out of sight, out of mind. I was trying to find a different place to put it so that it would get more sun and probably went a month without even checking in on it. And it's because it wasn't somewhere I saw it every day. And poor thing is all like gross and kind of shriveled up and pieces are falling off of it. I'm trying to revive it. I don't think it's going to work. I'm just so bummed. Could have been my office, you know, greenery. Just, I usually keep blackout curtains up on my windows, so I don't want to keep plants in the office unless they can exist in no light. It's just, so I have a black thumb. I'm really not good at plants. Oof, Simon says Hypno Huanli fans. Oh, from Hakey. Why don't they just develop one app like Twinsta Book Chat? It would be a complete mess without any rules, but people could yell their lungs out and post whatever they want. After a couple years, everybody would be so fed up that they would give up using social media and go back outside to see the nature and think, ha, why haven't I remembered how beautiful it is outside in the nature and outside unless and outside useless social media? Twitter's new business model. Let's wreck social media so that people don't use it anymore. All right. So, yeah, Twitter. I'm almost always wrong about these things. I was right about Vine. I was a year off, but I did predict Vine kind of cratering and imploding on itself. But I was super wrong about Snapchat. I really thought Snapchat was going to do the same. One of the things that I wanted to touch on in the gadget block, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on this, but it's just been an interesting, side topic kind of buried in the news. We're talking about smartwatches, obviously. I still have it on my desk. I almost always have it within arm's reach. Apple Watch, just really leading the charge on a premium smart device that lives on your wrist, like a mini phone that lives on your wrist with very good fitness applications. I don't think anyone would question the sort of dominance of the Apple Watch as a wearable device. The flip side of that has been this explosion of other sort of less smart but hardcore fitness featured trackers. This week, and I promise you it will be out this week, my Amazfit. Just a great example of super long battery life and detailed fitness and health tracking. The app for this is super granular. Like, you can put in all of your individual biological measurements just to try and aid in your health approach. So outside of those two polar opposites, it's actually been kind of a bit of a challenge. I would say Samsung's Gear line has probably been a bit more successful. Again, the popularity of Samsung smartphones kind of washes over a bit more in terms of ecosystem for Samsung smartwatches. But more often than not, I wear a Tick Watch. Legit 3 days of battery. The last update polished up a lot of the performance. Even out of the box, with some of the weird performance quirks of Wear OS, the new Snapdragon processor that's in this Tick Watch, this is the most fluid experience I think I've seen on Wear OS since the early cards interface of Android Wear. Like the first generation, you know, like my Zen Watch, you know, this is so much different. Just giving it that extra horsepower helps tremendously. And so if you were rocking like a 2-year-old Fossil, Wear OS is a different animal when it's properly powered. You have enough RAM and you've got a decent processor really kicking into some better performance use. I actually am now engaging more frequently with the watch than what I was doing before. So some of the little applets, like I was on a road trip, just like, hey, on my Apple Watch, I would check to see how loud this is in the car because it's my ears kind of hurt. You know, I'm on rough road and I'm going 75 miles an hour and hey, I can do that. And it was like one button push, swipe up through the apps, hit the little Tick hearing applet, and then I got a meter showing me what the decibels were around me. So much faster than trying to do that from a phone, immediately accessible on my wrist. And Wear OS didn't do that obnoxious hang up and lag just getting into my app drawer. It was usable. I could do it. And it was a tangible benefit. So, sorry, that was a really long preamble. Moto might be making some more watches. We don't believe they'll actually be made by Lenovo Motorola, but they will be probably sourced from another manufacturer and sold as Moto Watch and Moto One or Moto Watch One. This is coming up by John Fingus over at Engadget. Moto branded smartwatches are staging another comeback. And they won't rely on your Moto 360 nostalgia quite so much this time. So there's going to be a Moto 360 round and then a Moto Square, which, of course, everyone's saying it looks like it's just going to be another Apple Watch clone. But I'm seeing a little kind of Fitbit design in there. And it's not like it's got a digital crown. It's got much smaller bezels than the old Asus Zen watches had. I don't know. I mean, like, square watch faces doesn't necessarily just mean, oh, they copied Apple. But it could be kind of interesting. I would really like to see Google take Wear OS more seriously. There are the rumors that there was a reporting that the next Samsung smartwatch is going to be running some flavor of Android, maybe not Wear OS, but not running Tizen anymore. And so if we could get a bit of a comeback, to wearables for Google powered devices with Google applets and Google software support, that would be kind of nice. You know, Google owns Fitbit now. That deal has finally like properly gone through. So we're going to need to see what the next generation of Fitbits might have to offer, if there's going to be any better integration with Google services. But I'm saying there's like this little ember of potential. You know, there was this fire where Google and Wear OS Fossil was on board. We got some really extravagant and expensive smartwatches as like fashion pieces, which I hope no one bought. And then like just these regular sort of half-hearted updates and half-hearted refreshes. And now like that kind of thing is sort of what was that fire is now just sort of been put out. And there's like this tiny little glowing ember of potential of hope where maybe they could rekindle something. I don't know. It would be nice to not be so cynical about a Google project and watch them actually execute something with some consistency and some forethought and a plan and having a strategy, and not just, we'll put it out there, see if it's popular, and then gank it if it's not. It would be nice to see them iterate and improve. They've bought up Focals by North. They've bought up Fitbit. They have so much IP from all of these other acquisitions and all these other companies. It would just be really nice if Wear OS could extend beyond just a smartwatch. It's Wear operating system, Wear OS. I would like to see a chest strap for really, really good heart rate tracking, you know, like a Polar, like a strap. There's no reason why a wearable operating system should not be interacting with sensors in compression gear, you know, for like running leggings. There's no reason why sensors in shoes should not be communicating with a wearable operating system. And I desperately want information up at eye level, like my Focals, to contribute to an operating system that I wear. I mean, not many companies are going to have the resources, the data, the IP, the patents to pull all of that together. Any company that tries to innovate in the space is basically only doing it to hopefully get bought out by Apple, Google, maybe Microsoft. Maybe someone will make a play for a Microsoft. Maybe Microsoft will make a play in this space again. So I want competition, and I want to see something healthy kick up from this. Gary the Fireman, I have too many regular watches to even consider a smartwatch. I am kind of a watch like neophyte. Like, I've got a couple decent timepieces that are just nice. Take them for a night out when I could dress up for a night out. But more often than not, it's just the I hate looking at my phone to see what the notification was. Like, I absolutely hate notifications on phones. All right, switching out mugs. I don't know if anyone noticed, but I had an electric pink, like a really cool electric pink endangered species headphone jack mug. I got this for my wife, but I just had to show it off because it's, I really like this color of pink. Let me just kind of pull it back a little bit. I thought that came out pretty well. Anyway, now on to a megapickle mug, which is also full of water. It's too early for like a, nah, we won't make that joke. Or from Gormlord, I'm a hybrid watch man myself. I still love my Scoggin. I have a Scoggin hybrid. Super simple, just a couple little notification settings and then like a step counter. And it looks so good. I love that Scoggin design. It's such a clean look. All right, sorry, I'm just going through across the podcast. TicWatch Pro 4G LTE for $200. Might get one. I've got my TicWatch Pro over here. I had to take the strap off, so I need to fire this bad boy up again and see if the software update helped improve. Again, this was a good performer, and especially for battery life, this thing was great. I love this dual screen setup on the Tick Watch, but the Android Wear side of it could absolutely get in your way. You'd push the button, kind of wait a second for an app drawer to launch. Those little improvements for software help tremendously because you're working with pretty meager resources on a wrist-worn computer. Oh, yeah, McCorkran 3. Yeah, this never took off. For some reason, no one in North America cares about the full Android smartwatch option. I played with one, not long enough to be able to do a review, but it kind of came from like an Alibaba or somewhere, one of those just retailers where it's like it was kind of chunky. It ran kind of hot on my wrist, which was concerning, but it ran like a full build of Android. It was way too early to put out something like that. It ran like garbage. The radio reception was terrible. It was not a good solution. I'd be curious to see if we could do something better today. Like if you took like one of those little Palm mini phones and kind of built like a nice leather kind of wrist guard kind of cradle for it, I bet you that would work better today. Anyway, speaking of Motorola, because they're going to be coming out with these new watches, so stay tuned for that. I have been increasingly delighted by phones that are not premium tier expensive. This is something that I really am genuinely trying to work in with a bit more regularity. Obviously, I think we've got sort of in the tech YouTube landscape, we've got kind of a front loading of the most premium devices. Those get the most traffic. Those are the most interest, the most searched for. But finding the joy of firing up a less expensive phone, this has been so much fun since the Pixel 3a. Here in North America, we have not always gotten the best collection of competitive mid-ranger, lower mid-range kinds of products. And the Pixel 3a just kind of kicked that door open wide, followed up immediately by the iPhone SE. I've sold all of my premium iPhones. The only iPhone I run, oh, it's way over there, but it's in the wiener dog case. Only iPhone I run right now is an iPhone SE. It's the only iPhone I care to use. Touch ID. It's brilliant. Battery life sucks so bad. It is not good, especially for my style of use. I thought I could get by. No, it's not that great. But, you know, it's like the only proper replacement for my iPhone 5S styled original iPhone SE. It's great. I really do like little Mighty Mouse communicator phones, especially when I just got to go run to the grocery store. I'm in a mask. Can't use face unlock very well. I should try on, I don't know, is the update out properly? Someone tell me if the face unlock Apple Watch update is actually out, because I actually haven't updated my SE in a little while. Anyway, short story incredibly long. I've been digging this new slate of less expensive devices. TCL 10 5G, that's a solid phone option. Nord N10, that's a surprisingly solid hardware option. And this just came in the mail, courtesy of the folks at Republic Wireless. So I'll show the little, hello, you just going to sign on to Republic Wireless. This is a thing that they just sent me. And this is the Motorola One 5G Ace. We're not talking anything, you know, super fancy. Retail, we're talking what, $299? Triple camera array. What is the main shooter is a 48 megapixel shooter. A big old screen, but I don't like that there's a big, fat, hard black bezel around the hole punch. So that is definitely distracting. I'm like, I do see that more than if we have a slightly more discreet hole punch. But big old, nicely plasticked phone. What's really tricky, someone's going to have to help me out with this, because I use like soft China ball lighting. I've got some cinema style lights. I've got an LED with a soft diffuser on it. When I hold this up, because it's kind of mirror reflective, the plastic on this, it is so hard to get a good handle on the color of this phone. This phone is actually a really deep plum purple. So, you know, at a distance, it just kind of looks black or mirror finish. But up close, you're like, oh, no, there's actually like a color accent on this that is, it's really quite lovely. And especially for the plastic back, the sort of the slightly chunkier frame, they're not trying to wow you with like curved display edges or, you know, it's just like it's a device that you hold and you take calls on and you can do things on it. It's just kind of refreshing. This is an eminently familiar, or I should say a lot of these companies are kind of piggybacking on a very similar plastic back aesthetic. Hold on one second, because I got to get my Nord, and I'm going to get my most recent TCL. And these are all cut from very similar cloth. So I think that kind of transition, as we've been talking about 5G, I'm maybe a little less excited about millimeter wave. Like millimeter wave is going to be one of those architectural improvements for when we're all going back to public places again. And it could be kind of handy in very specific use cases. Like I'm going to a baseball game, and because we know that stadiums are places where lots of people go, I should have millimeter wave coverage and I'll be on a different pipe to the internet than a lot of other people there. That's cool. But increasingly, just sub 6 5G has been pretty handy. It's a minor tweak and improvement to speed in some places, and then it's a little bit better for network congestion as you sort of upgrade and migrate people from LTE to 5G. Tech potato, millimeter wave for venues, sub 6 for everywhere else. You can't drive with millimeter wave. If you're driving and you want decent connectivity, it's going to be sub 6. I was war driving for millimeter wave around Venice Beach, and I could outdrive millimeter wave way faster than I could actually acknowledge that I was connected to a millimeter wave tower. So, Nord N10, solid phone, $299. The TCL 10 5G. On Verizon, solid phone. Climbs up a little bit in price. I believe full MSRP is $399, but have been some crazy sales on this. Also, there have been some crazy sales on the Nord too. And now on Republic, they're carrying this Moto Ace 5G. Also, around that $299 price tag. Now that Sub 6 is hitting this $300 tier, we're seeing, you know, 5G can be real now. If 5G was only accessible on like $600 phones and up, that's not a great market just to get 5G adoption rolling for your sort of bread and butter daily driver. I walk into an MVNO and I need something that's going to connect to their network, and I check my email and occasionally look at Twitter. You know, like you need that more accessible tier. We're also, you know, I think there's a good reason that you would maybe want to spend a little bit more if you're looking at like a Pixel 4a 5G, especially sort of accounting for things like longer term software support, where none of these devices, I believe, are going to be getting significant operating system updates after a year. We can hope that they'll at least keep up with security patches past that. So you've got to pay more up front for a Pixel, knowing that Google's going to keep it on at least a 3-year train. Makes perfect sense to me, right? I get that. An extra $100 on top of the price of some of these phones, that's the ballpark we should be in. But now I feel like these are legitimate, practical, accessible options where someone making a targeted purchase on some kind of prepay cellular plan, or even just looking to save money on a more mainstream carrier, has some good options here. And the performance of these things is as like actual just daily driver devices has been surprisingly good. Like the processing power that we've got on tap at $300 easily supersedes where we were back on Snapdragon 835s. So the 835 is still a perfectly capable chipset today. Not exciting. It's not going to kind of rock your socks, but you're missing very little here. You want to shoot 4K video? It can shoot 4K video. All three of these phones have headphone jacks. So you can plug, oh, this is on the other side. You can plug in headphones and like listen to stuff. Lower power internal components, still decently sizable batteries. Battery life, good bit better than taking a very high performance, powerful phone and putting a smaller battery on it. So very, very early impressions. I really like what Motorola is doing with this build. The sort of square camera module feels sort of charmingly a year out of date. I mean, if you were really into camera design, you would know that now we're going with dominoes, right? Not squares. Who would want a square in 2021? You want like a domino assembly on the back of your phone. That's what's hip right now in smartphone design. I gotta ask. Okay, so I'm holding this up here, and you can see that hole punch. Is that really practically any better than a teardrop? Is anyone looking at this and like, well, that's less disruptive to my display experience than if there were just like kind of like a little triangular sort of teardrop shape? This is so much. I'm so glad that I've got like what, 20 rows of pixels? Not even that, probably. What, like 15 rows of pixels in between the top of the camera and the top of the speaker so that I can have more screen in between the camera and the top edge of the assembly. I've never understood this, like, oh, well, minimizing the disruption is a hole punch is definitely preferable. I don't see it. I don't think that's a thing. I need to dig in and actually like start customizing that, because like on my OnePlus, I just finished installing an update. That's why my OnePlus is not showing anything right now. There it goes. I've just started just nuking anything by the camera. So if there is a setting on the phone to ignore the strip of screen where the hole punch or the notch might live, I just try to get rid of it. And that seems to be working better for me. It's frustrating when you look at a game, when you're playing a game and the camera is interfering with the side of the screen, because often that's where you might have like a menu option or part of your controls. And if you can't remap or move the controls, then you just have this little eyesore that's constantly sort of in your way. So not super thrilled with that. But so far, less than a day of use. I got to say, I mean, like, this is the first Motorola I've really picked up. Almost 2 years now. I don't think I did a Motorola in 2019. Yeah, so 2 years. I'm feeling really good about what this looks like, and yeah, like I just had to do it. I missed like those gestures where you flip and then you can get the camera fired up. That kind of stuff is just really cool. Does it still do the chop?
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Megapickle coffee mug of your very own. Mmm, savory, delicious mega pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. I don't know if any of you out there, sorry, for those of you listening to the audio version of this podcast, I am chopping the phone in the air as if I'm like hacking with a knife, and that turns on the LED on the back of the phone to use as a flashlight. It's one of my all-time favorite shortcuts on any phone. It's so silly. How many times, like, I'll be up late at night, I'll be editing some video, I want to go to bed, I don't want to wake up Marie, but we have so much stuff just on the floor of our bedroom right now. And so I'll walk in and I'll like, oh, let me turn on the flashlight just so I can kind of step quietly around her. And on a Moto, you just go, and then it flicks on. So I don't know if anyone watches Luis Rossman. Rossman Group, and he runs that repair channel. Flipping hilarious. It was about 2 weeks ago. He put out another video just saying, like, I don't do phone reviews. Stop asking me to do phone reviews. Here's a phone review for you. And he talks about his like several years old $150 Moto G. I don't even know what Moto G it is. I want to say it was like a Moto G7, maybe a Moto G. It wasn't a Moto G5 because I believe that had a metal back. So it might have been a Moto G6. Regardless, picked it up for $150. And in true like Rossman Group style crankiness, he's like, oh, and this. And then like, yeah, I can just chuck my phone and I don't care because it's made out of plastic. And I was riding my bicycle and my more expensive Samsung, the cold caused it to start boot looping. And like, you just couldn't use it. And this Moto, it just won't ever quit. The top comment, which he pinned, was someone coming out to say, this was a really biased review. Some Samsung knight had to jump on a Luis Rossman video where, if you know anything about Rossman, he's going to care way more about whether or not he can open the phone and replace components than like the actual performance of the phone. He doesn't care that it's got a garbage camera. He doesn't care that the web browsing performance is slow. He doesn't care that he can't really play games on it. He's not going to care about any of that. His thing is repairability and like right to repair legislation. And so he's going to care, like, is it easy to crack this thing open and swap out a battery? It's easy. Cool. This phone is better. It's just so funny. Like, no one asked, but someone had to come in and be like, well, I'm reviewing your review because you are obviously biased. Yes, that was the point. It was the point of the review. Well, you should look at a more premium phone because then you'll get software updates and then, you know, batteries and screens and components will be better built. No, he's not going to care. And he explained in a 15-minute video why none of that matters to him. And still, someone had to come in and be like, oh, I just like reviews that are more objective and tell me the things that I already know and that they say the things that I agree with is what I care about. My wife told me this pretty funny joke. When she told me the joke, it was about mansplainers. But I would like to repurpose this joke for wannabe tech influencers. Where does a techie go to get their water? A well, actually. I very much enjoyed that take on my profession because I absolutely resemble that in my most obnoxious moments. Dave Burns, its SEO isn't as good, so it's not as worth it. So here's a takeaway. I've done a few videos on Republic Wireless Service in the past. I don't even know if they have an affiliate program. I should ask. I could put a promo code up or something if you guys want to try and save some cash. I like having competition in the MVNO space. Google Fi has been pretty solid for me. They actually even sponsored a quick video just talking about what it was like using Google Fi. Mint has been really solid. I'm still cranky with Visible. Visible being on the Verizon network, I think it's kind of silly how difficult it is to get other phones on Visible. I really want to get a second line, use Visible for that second line, I'm sorry, actually, it would be a third line. I really want to get a third line, but I want to use it with my wing. And you can't activate a wing on visible. Ugh. So most of my family's on Google Fi now. My mom, my dad, my brother, my sister and her husband. Yeah, I mean, like almost all of them are on Fi. My brother was on Ting. He liked Ting a lot. And then I used to have a line on Straight Talk. So this is great. I mean, this is really good. If your demands on mobile data are not unlimited, you know, postpaid main carrier grade, these deals, these pricings, being able to meter, like I kicked back. I was doing Google Fi Unlimited and then I switched back to metered because I'm not traveling or anything. So I don't need, you know, unlimited data. It's a bummer when I have to crack into my second gig and have to pay an extra buck, you know, on my Google Fi bill. It's kind of like that, it's kind of the challenge. Like, can I spend less and less every single month? So when Republic Wireless put this out there, what's been kind of encouraging is seeing the adoption for sub 6 5G on these MVNOs. Better coverage, better signal reliability, better congestion issues, especially if you work or if you live in a really congested area, 5G can help with that. So this makes 5G more real to me. When I see 5G on Fi, when I see 5G on Visible, when I see 5G on Mint, when I see 5G on Republic, now I feel like this is the transition point. This is where consumers have viable options and aren't getting left behind because they're not willing to spend $1,000. When 5G was only available at like $999, that's not real. That's not a consumer accessible technology. On my desk right now. This is great. This is great. Just boom, three phones. Like I feel like TechSpert, right? How do I like format my... Like I hold the phones like right there and then I make a wacky face off to the side, right? That's like TechSpert, right? This is fun. And that they're just genuinely good devices. I took out, oh, I don't know if I can, I don't have it saved here. Man. Nope, I'm not going to be able to just swap it over. So this is the Nord N10. I still need to do just a little bit more wrap up, but I'm going to do a full camera deep dive on this phone. Like taking it around Southern California, getting some nice warm wintry light from Southern California. Like this camera will never win any like legit showdown. If you start pricing up the food chain, you can go and get a Galaxy S10 probably for a similar price used for what you would pay full MSRP for this Nord N10. The camera on the S10 is going to be better. No one's going to question that. The shots here are pretty good. They're not bad. I would say in that kind of casual point and shoot style photography, this is a horrible way to show this off because I'm just showing a phone screen over a live stream and like, you know, you're really going to be able to tell by the pixels what I'm talking about. I wouldn't feel super put out using these cameras. Like they've been fine. The issues, I mean, like some of the nice fun features, the super low light, night modes kind of shots, like that's a bit more of a challenge, but I'm good. I'm not seeing why we've been putting these phones up with such angst over not having the bestest cameras. You don't have a gooder camera? I would not. That phone is not worth it. Well, Simon says Hypno. I don't think TechSpert does the grinning face on his thumbnails. He does a smirk. TechSpert, doesn't he do a smirk? Like, it's kind of like one of those faces, like, I can't, I'm doing this mirrored, so. Isn't it kind of like that? Isn't that TechSpert's thing? Like, he's kind of looking to the camera, he's holding up, like, a stack of phones. Like, he's like, fanning out, like, a whole card deck of phones with, like, a, I don't know. Someone send me a TechSpert thumbnail. Maybe I'm way off. Ha, Oh, Dave Burns, I think the issue is that your studio lights blew out the camera capturing the font screen. Again, this was not supposed to be some sort of scientific representation, because, again, most of this was actually supposed to be focused on talking about the Moto. Immediately, I like textures on the buttons. They're very accessible, easy to find. I love that the Moto icon has held. Like, what is it, from the Moto X days? There would be a little Moto icon, and it would always drive me crazy that they wouldn't put the fingerprint sensor in that Moto icon, and now they have. So it's a rear fingerprint sensor. How many people out there, what do we think? Was it last week we talked about the LGWs? Again, low cost, focused on India, and they looked so much like the Nord. Like what Motorola is doing, I have no insight. I'm not claiming that this is the case, but if LG were working with the BBK parts bin to manufacture phones and put LG labels on them, I think they would look a little similar to what we see on a Nord N100. But just looking at these devices and how similar they're kind of becoming. Glossy plastic back, some kind of corner-mounted camera assembly, rear-mounted fingerprint sensor, like, they're cousins. They're practically cousins. Like, I could sing the Patty Duke theme song right now. Just so many solid similarities for arriving at kind of an agreed-upon, this is what a phone is. This is what a phone does. This is how a phone works. Do you need the fanciest, latest and greatest, all the bells and whistles and all that crazy stuff? No? Here's a phone. And it does phone. And you're good. And the only one that does seem to kind of stray from that is the TCL. So plastic back, rear-mounted fingerprint sensor, but then the Bender strip of cameras. Minor difference right there. There's our crazy architectural difference between a TCL and a Moto and a Nord. I'm from JJ, Patty Duke, some boomer guy. I am not a boomer. Thank you very much. I was addicted to Nick at Night when I was a kid. Flippin' loved old classic TV reruns from the original Batman, the 1960s Adam West Batman, Patty Duke, F Troop, Flip Wilson. Who wouldn't watch old reruns of Flip Wilson on Nick at Night? I mean, Flip Wilson was the man. I'm forgetting a bunch now. But there were so many, like Gilligan's Island. I mean, come on. There was a classic era of boomer sitcom. Totally rad. But I came to that third hand. I came to that 20 years late. Oh, and Gary the Fireman, thank you for the assist. Aditya was asking, what is an MVNO? An MVNO stands for Mobile Virtual Network Operator. So it's a company that buys network access from a major player like AT&T, T-Mobile, or Verizon, and then they sell different rates depending on different services and different features. Often MVNOs have access to some of the faster tiers of network connections, but their network connections will not be prioritized on the main network. So if you own a T-Mobile plan, if you're on a T-Mobile plan, you'll probably get preferred treatment on that network over someone who's on an MVNO, which is leasing time on T-Mobile's network. And again, the rules and the positioning and the data rates and the throttling, all of those things are very particular and why you should always check out your smartphone bills. You should always kind of dig into the fine print to see what it is that you're really paying for, and then also what your restrictions might be. Throttling might cap more aggressively, or you might have a different rate depending on usage. So you kind of want to play back and forth. But that's why I've been so excited by Republic and Mint and Visible and Google Fi. Why my main personal SIM is on Google Fi is because sometimes if you don't have needs that are, you know, sort of up at that main tier, it's pretty easy to save cash. My last Google Fi bill was $27. I had a really light data month, and that was reflected in a very cheap bill.
Oh, come on, Zalbotnik. Xaobotnik.
He's not a boomer, but he's talking about boomer TV.
Classic sitcoms are gold. I don't care what you say. Oh, Aditya, you're so young.
Juan, you're not making any sense. Gilligan's Island aside, I don't know anything else that you just mentioned.
Yeah, but you know Gilligan's Island. And if you haven't seen the original 1960s Adam West Batman, you are depriving yourself of comic gold. And beyond just like ironically watching it because they make fun of Batman. No, there is some classic 1960s sitcom writing, gaggery, and physical comedy in the 1960s Batman, which I don't think has ever been beat. We still play Batman tropes, and there is language about Batman today which was influenced by the 1960s Batman. So, I mean, that is a cultural staple of American television. I'm so glad I own them on DVD and that I've ripped them on my NAS. My daughter loves them. It's like the fight scenes, she thinks they're hilarious, and she's right because they are. I desperately want an open world Batman video game inspired by the Biff Pow splat of 1960s Batman. I want that so bad. And it's such a shame that Adam West has passed. My wife worked at the talent agency that used to rep him back when he was doing Family Guy. And just like he would get on the phone and she said, like, he was the sweetest. He was the kindest. He was so respectful to like all of the office staff. It didn't matter if you were like the newest like receptionist or if you were like a hard hitting agent or, you know, on a desk as an assistant. He was just a lovely person to work with and to work for, and just couldn't be more excited to be doing wacky cartoons like Family Guy. Like just loved every second that he got to jump into a recording booth and that people wanted to work with him and that he got to do something fun and wacky and outlandish and that he was always game for one of those challenges. And it's just a shame because I feel like he would have loved, just imagine if Adam West had gotten to see a video game based on his persona of Batman from the 1960s. I think it would have been lovely. And I think a game like that could have been bright and vibrant and ridiculous and could have been a satire of current comic books and could have been so much fun to put together. I'd still play one today. It just wouldn't be the same seeing sort of the 1960s motif and knowing that it's not really Adam West doing the voice would kind of be a step removed. Like it'd always be that little distraction going, oh, but it's not Adam West. So anyway, that's just my love of classic television. Oh yeah, someone brought Simon Says Hypno. Adam's Family. Adam's Family is crazy progressive. Adam's Family deserves to be in like television collegiate classes to examine what we did to the family sitcom, turning it on its head with characters like the Adam's Family. You would not have meta humor today without shows like The Addams Family. It just would not exist in the same form or fashion. And how Addams Family totally played on all of those terrible sitcom tropes of their time, where like the man and wife in Addams Family are very aroused with each other in a time where sitcom marriages were often depicted by the couple sleeping in separate beds across a whole room from each other. Like, what are you going to do, push the beds together? That's not how marriage works, guys. and here you've got like, you know, you've got a couple, you've got a married couple that are super into each other. All right, let me move on to the last mug and we can start wrapping this up because we're right at 2 hours. And our tech conversation has descended into a television history kind of retrospect. All right. Oh, Aditya, I'm definitely watching the Adam West Batman. I love Batman and would love a fresh take on it. You're in for a trip. I gotta say, it's goofy and over the top and vibrant and fun, and it is not anything like our sort of current idea of Batman. And get this out of the way here. Simon says Hypno TV marriages in the 60s were like snooker. You had to have one foot on the floor. If you were a married couple on TV in the 1960s, you always had to leave at least a balloon space in between you and your partner. Again, it was like so progressive that like I Love Lucy, you know, she was married to a Cubano and like she was pregnant during the run of that show, which means at some point they might have engaged in some baby making activities. And that was salacious when I Love Lucy was on the air. That was controversial. And it was only because Lucille Ball had like the leverage to say, what are you going to do? Take me off the air? Screw you. Well, we're going to keep making the show. And she was not playing. Okay, sorry. Again, I really can go way, way down the deep end of all of this stuff. All right. I'm getting questions, Pacostin and McCorkran. I definitely see what you're asking there. I recently put out that video on Android 11 for the V60. Definitely give that a watch. We're not going to be in wait and see territory for LG because they're both asking about updates on other phones. The V60 just got Android 11. Something tells me the order will probably go Velvet, then Wing, and then phones from the year before. So I know I had a lot of people in my comments on that video going, oh, but what about my V50? And it was very, very difficult to like reply and not be like, well, get in line, you know, like we know LG software. I would expect that there will probably still be some traction on Android 11, especially for how decently supported the G7 and the V40 were. I mean, running Android 10, getting some more up-to-date security patches, like LG actually has done better, but we shouldn't expect night and day difference from LG, especially with the current state of their messaging. All right. Oh, and Steve saying the AT&T V60 just got the update today. Very good to know. I know, again, I had a few AT&T folks going, oh, but why not me? And from Al Spockley, one, your report on LG developing the desktop mode further gives me a lot of hope that the V70 is online this year as well. I don't think they'd bother with R&D if they were just about to drop the whole thing. What do you think? I honestly don't know. I think it's pretty clear why I have such a soft spot for LG, for how much I love competition. I really enjoy devices that give me hardware capabilities. And this goes back to a conversation that I've had since the V20. On the V20, I was making a conscious choice to choose LG hardware over over other companies that were better at software. The removable battery, the metal back, where the fingerprint sensor was located, the camera capabilities, the quad DAC, the little ticker display. I missed that little LG ticker display and the dual front-facing cameras. There was so much about the V20 that I loved. You just had to suffer through the fact that you knew you weren't going to get timely, if any, software support depending on your carrier. So when I see what's gone down with the V60, I don't think this is any data that we can use to predict what might happen next with LG. I don't think it's a prediction that LG smartphone business is going to continue. I don't think it's good data to suggest that LG is going to sell off their division. I don't think it's good data to predict whether or not they might shutter the whole division. I just think it's unlikely that LG smartphones, like the team of people at LG that make smartphones, are just going to vanish. I think it's increasingly likely in the medium term that LG might look for a buyer and then move that division off to another company. Whether or not that's another, like a Vietnam company, whether or not they stay in South Korea, no idea. Really don't know. But I don't think the V60 getting an Android 11 update is enough data to suggest any possibility. So I really feel like 2021, and especially if you're an LG fan like I am, it's just wait and see. At this point, it's beyond trying to speculate. We won't know until we
until we really know. Like the rumors, the leaks, and the sort of absence of messaging from LG. No idea. I really don't. I'm hoping we'll get a V70. I mean, playing with the V60, and then I'd be curious to see how LG handles, you know, newer hardware or a new chipset. I really want there to be a V70. I don't know. So we'll see. I bought another case for my V60 just to kind of help keep it in good shape. You know, it might end up being a phone that I keep my SIM card in throughout 2021. We'll have to see. I don't know that I can just straight give up quad DAC. It's really good. So, yes, I've been trying to end this podcast like three times now. Here, let me take one more drink of water. And McCorkran 3, if you have an LG, I would even maybe put out a play, because you can get like a G8 for dumb cheap these days. If you were just going to use it as a multimedia device, quad DAC is real good. I mean, if you can find like $200 or less on a G8 in good condition, that might be worth it, depending on how much you like your ears. All right. I'm going to be following up on the Patreon, trying to figure out what to do about movie night this coming Saturday. So be on the lookout there. We're going to have another community play along. And then I think for the next game night, we're going to look at some card games, just something that we can have some fun, chill, casual activities with. I wasn't able to get a movie night going this week, but it is going to be coming next Saturday. Lots of stuff. I'm wrapping up audio reviews, and I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now. I'm churning through as much content as I can, try and get some of these videos out. And then also I'm going to be revisiting, where is it? Oh, it's over here. Doing the Android 11 follow-up for the V60. I think that's kind of the format I'm going to use for some longer term looks at phones. I don't want to shoot the same kind of produced video that I do for my main reviews. I need to streamline and make these conversations a little bit easier to get out, because I start a whole bunch of videos and then it's hard to finish them because there's so much like B-roll and production work that needs to happen. So one of the first phones that I want to revisit is actually a phone that I think I did not do a very good job covering when it first launched. So I'm going to be taking just another trip back looking at the OnePlus 8. I've been a big fan of the OnePlus 8 Pro. I've been showing off the OnePlus 8T. This phone kind of got a little lost in the transition from 2019 to 2020. And I feel it deserves some second look a little longer term out, especially as we're getting some rumors that next week we're going to be seeing like OnePlus 9s. Now I think this is the right time just to kind of look back at where this thing actually landed and what it could do and how it was different. So that's going to be, I think, my casual video of the week, is just talking about something that I don't think I really landed it. I don't think I really, I gave it the attention that it deserved. And it was tough because you get two phones at the same time between a OnePlus 8 and a OnePlus 8 Pro. Someone like me is going to lean towards the Pro. So tons of stuff, plenty of chatter, lots of conversations. And again, the biggest of thank yous, all of you out there hit that hype train and you were supporting and gifting subs and you know, telling me to check my posture and stretch and hydrate. I really do appreciate the support, the conversations. It means a lot. And it's why I love kicking off my week with these broadcasts. Just, we get to come together, we get to have some fun, chat out some wacky news, and then maybe we'll descend on a deep dive on television history. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know where that came from, but I needed to have that chat about the 1960s Batman, apparently. So folks, stay tuned, somegadgetguy.com for all of the content that I'm going to be putting out. And I hope you're along for the ride, because I think it's going to be some good stuff. I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I hope to see all of you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be well. take care of yourselves, and also try to help take care of the people around you. They probably need the help too. And don't do anything wacky or crazy, or at least too crazy. I want to see y'all in good shape. So we'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.